The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
George and Izzy make up and hook up. Meredith becomes a people person, and Christina gets a pat on the back. We'll have commentary on all that and more in this week's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed last night's episode as much as George and Izzy did. That is, if they can even remember it. Drunken debauchery aside, last night also saw the arrival of one Dr. Colin Marlowe. Will he be the next chief? We'll find out more in next week's episode, My Favorite Mistake, which airs Thursday, March 22nd from 9 to 10 p.m. and is available the next day at abc.com. For now, we have added insight from the writer of last night's episode, supervising producer Deborah Kahn, and executive producer Betsy Beers.
Hi, this is Betsy Beers, and this is Grey's Anatomy. And I'm here with a phone.
Telephone.
As we all know, that's the telephone. My assistant Jim has to pick up the phone. Apparently I'm very popular today, which is really incredible, because whole hours go by when the phone didn't ring, and now we're podcasting. It's all about the phone.
That's not true. Her phone rings all the time.
This is with us is the lovely and talented Deborah Kahn.
Hi.
Who we're very happy to have with us today, because she actually wrote the episode that we are going to be discussing in excruciating detail for you.
Yeah.
Hi. Which is called
Scars and Souvenirs.
Scars and Souvenirs, which is a song title, right?
It is a song title. And don't try to spell souvenirs at home.
Okay, because I can't.
Yeah.
But she was very good at it, because she's a writer, as we all have already established. I'm not a writer. My skill set is somewhat undetermined.
But I do talk on the phone a lot.
You do talk on the phone. But I had to look up souvenirs.
Did you really?
I couldn't spell it by myself.
See, that is one of those weird words that you think that you know how to spell, but then it turns out you really don't know how to spell.
The little squiggly line comes up under it every single time.
Okay. I also just mentioned that it's really frigging hot in my office today. And more excitingly, we're going to talk about this episode, which I think probably has one of the most gigantic reveals in the history of the aforementioned Grey's Anatomy, which I know there are probably a bunch of different reactions to out there. I know we all went, too.
Yeah.
Because I think it's, I mean, I think that in retrospect, when you go back and you look at the episodes leading up to this, you can kind of see this coming, okay?
Oh, it was all over the place. The two of them, it's a miracle it didn't happen before.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that they didn't just grab each other in surgery one day.
It's true.
The moral of the story is don't have friends. Because it just leads to disaster and sex.
Which, is that the bad moral or the good moral? Because then, to me, that would be the moral of the story is have a whole lot of friends, because it involves having a good time and sex.
Right, because it just means there are options everywhere.
There's a really
good
point.
When in doubt, your best friend.
That's definitely something, too. But I also sort of felt like all the way along for a while now, ever since George married Callie, Izzy's really been tortured, and she hasn't really known why.
Huh? She was evil, and at least now we understand that there was a reason.
I always sort of felt for her, though, because even during that early period where she was being really heinous to Callie, I still felt for her, because she and George and Christina and Meredith and Alex, to some degree, they were so tight. And little by little by little this season, everything's been sort of like splitting them up and separating them. So I think you kind of get that she's feeling more and more isolated, too. And this is sort of this culmination of this whole thing.
And her guy died, and she was grieving and alone.
And yeah. And
her best friend wasn't there for her because he was marrying some bimbo that she doesn't really like.
That's absolutely it. And then on top of it, you figure Meredith almost died. She almost bought the farm.
Right.
So she was the one who was really believing and got through all of that. And I think that sort of in a weird way gave her the strength to, on some level, even subconsciously, get to this point where they could actually...
Right,
in the special place.
In the face of death.
Exactly.
Have sex with anybody who you wanted to and didn't get a chance to.
And also, by the way, with the help of what was the size bottle of liquor that they were drinking out of?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a decent amount of bourbon put away
in
anticipation of the event.
I think that's definitely probably had a little bit to do with it, would be my guess, too.
Callie has a lot of money.
By the way, while we're on big surprises on this episode...
Callie has a lot of money.
What about the fact that she's a Zippo zillion trillion heiress or something?
All right. Well, you figure And Sean has been talking about this for a very long time, that Callie was a millionaire, and we were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to go public with it. But you look back and you think it's the only reason a girl's going to live in a basement.
That's true.
Everybody else is going to find a way to pull it together, whereas the girl with a gajillion dollars thinks it's romantic to live in the basement of the hospital.
And also, I think, probably on some level, in some weird way, is probably rebelling against all the money and the parents and the whole thing, because it's like, you know, I'm going to live in the basement. I don't need any of this stuff. I'm going to pretend I don't have it.
So, which is incredibly easy to say mm-hmm. when you can.
Absolutely.
Like, when push comes to shove, you can move into the Four Seasons. That's always, like, a great...
Right, but a lot harder.
Fallback position.
Exactly. But I thought that was... I think now Izzy's rich. They sort of have something in common. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Callie and George, too, at this point. Because with all of this going on and, like, the fact that he's so pissed off at her...
He's very upset. Well, he, you know, she's been... keeping this thing, she's been keeping this really big thing from him. And easy to say, oh, I don't like to talk about my money and I don't like to live that much. It's family money, it's not my money. It's really easy to say that when you have money. Mm-hmm. But to say that to somebody who has always struggled and their family's always struggled and every, you know, getting through medical school must have been so hard for him and for his folks and for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What a slap in the face. And then also all of that time... where George, because Callie was into him faster and it was easier for her to fall into the relationship mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. easier for her to fall in love, she was always there first and he was always kind of not up to the mark that she was at. And so she was always pissed. She was always irritated with him. She was always mad at him and he was always getting whopped in the nose with a newspaper. He was always in trouble all the time. He didn't say, I love you fast enough. He didn't want to spend time mm-hmm. with her fast enough. Mm-hmm. He didn't want, he was like, there was nothing that he could do that was right. And finally, like after all that, after how many months of him apologizing for everything that he did in this relationship, for her to have been keeping this massive thing about her life,
mm-hmm.
it's just wrong. It's wrong.
It is, but I think then you look at her side of it, which is what I think is really interesting and why I felt like that all that stuff works so well. You look at her side of it, and if you've spent your entire life being judged for something besides who you really are,
right.
you've carried this around as this thing which has become this albatross around your neck. It's colored and contaminated every single relationship you've ever had.
And that's awkward between men and women.
It's totally awkward between men and women, and you figure she finally meets something that she thinks is really special and precious, and in a weird way, for all... the amount of kind of grief she gives him, kind of delicate. You know, the relationship is very fragile and delicate because yeah. I think she's always questioning whether or not he's really committed, given yeah. the relationship with the friends and everything else. I think there's really something about the not telling somebody immediately and then slipping into the habit of just never mentioning it because
right.
it's easier that way. And in a weird way, this way she could live in her own fantasy, which is, I am like everybody else. I am just like them. So I totally understand her point of view, too, which is you want an equal playing field. And even though it seems like a great thing if you don't have it, to her, because that was the only experience she ever had, it hasn't been great. So
They
got married so fast.
What are you going to do? You're going to get on the plane to Vegas? You've got, like, a one-hour flight. Let's go through all of the horrible things about me that I should have said that you didn't know.
Well, that's, like, one of my favorite lines you wrote, which is, like, the ferret. Which is like, is there anything else you don't have? And she's like, yeah, I had a ferret. I had a ferret. Which is, all of a sudden, I think what's great is you realize, both in this episode and the early episode, when he doesn't know her middle name, right. how little they actually knew about each other getting into this whole thing, which is kind of intense.
No matter how much you know about each other, suddenly when you're faced with the, oh my God, we're going to be together forever, it's like, oh my, I forgot to tell you this, and I forgot to tell you this. And
sure.
I mean, most of those things aren't... $25 million, but
they're the equivalent depending on what's important to you, and there are these things that
and I think no matter what you do, you wake up after getting married and you think, wow, there's this stranger that I'm now going to be with for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
And no matter how well you know them, there's always that moment of, do I really know them or are they a stranger?
Absolutely. And you know, it's weird, I think Burke and Christina are going through exactly the same things.
Yeah.
You know, which is all that stuff is now, all the things that they've had issues with are still coming to light now, you know,
yeah.
given where they are in their relationship and the proposal, and that Christina seems both into it in this incredible way and ambivalent in a different way. And having her, Colin, show up was like huge. I mean, it's a big oops. I mean, talking about kind of there being something that you left out of your backstory. I mean, not
that my last boyfriend was last also boyfriend. A cardiothoracic whiz kid. And
he was my boyfriend?
And he was my teacher.
And we're kind of hanging out for a while. It's like kind of a big deal. So it's interesting how all of these relationships are kind of going through this. I mean, those two specifically are going through this, that big special secret that pops out of a cake when you're least expecting it.
Everything I forgot to mention.
I got to say, I love the scene you wrote, the closet scene where they're both in the closet and both Meredith's fake mom and Colin are standing outside and they can hear absolutely everything they say and they're fighting over for closet turf because I don't know if you guys know this, Grey's Anatomy, we really love to put things in closets. We like to put lots of conflict scenes in closets. And
there's
elevators.
Not a lot of private space in the hospital. It's a big public space. The only people that get privacy are the patients and not really any them because people are putting them in little gowns and looking at their parts. But where are you going to go? Where are you going to go in a hospital other than Jenner's closet?
Now, what I want to see is, I'm anxious to see in the next episode, is if Colin still has the hots for Christina, because I can't tell yet. I sort of suspect it, but I can't tell yet. I mean, I know.
He looks a little bummed when she says she's getting married. He definitely has that deflated look when she says that she's getting married. But it's possible, I mean, if he wanted her, why didn't he come get her before? It's not like it's been a secret where she is.
That's true. And the truth is, he really, really, really want to be chief.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like he's there to be chief, but I think
he'd be a good chief. I mean, he kind of blows them all out of the water.
Well, he does.
If I'm Richard, I'm picking him because why do you want somebody who's, just because everybody else is going to be kind of all over each other. It's all going to be about competition and backstabbing if one of them wins and has to, you know, if Derek's got to be the boss of Burke.
No, it's all about then continually proving the alpha dog status as opposed to Colin comes in. He's from totally someplace else. He's also suave and self-assured and has that phenomenal British accent. And we're so excited because it's Roger Rees, who we all really like, who's playing the part. But
and people love to listen to people with British accents. People will take orders from people with British accents. Can I say it ten times easier?
And if somebody comes in to me with a British accent and tells me I'm really sick, I believe them and I will exactly do what they say. And plus, for some reason, it might feel better to me because they have the British accent.
Right.
So I think that's also part of it, too. But he's also very compelling, and I think he would be a really great choice to run the hospital. And as you said, put all the other folks into place in a different kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
So that, I'm really going to be interested to see what happens. Like, okay, I know what happens, but I'm going to be really interested to see how you guys react to what happens, because I'd be kind of fibbing if I didn't.
Wouldn't that be great if we didn't tell Betsy about anything that was coming?
And so the great thing about the podcast would be that I really seriously knew nothing, which means I really had a firm control over my confusing job. Over the confusing domain that we like to call what I do. The other thing was, and yeah, I thought was really moving and really different, is this weird progressing relationship that Meredith seems to be having with her dad and with Susan.
Yeah, it's like Susan is suddenly making it possible for two people who can't, under any circumstances, carry on a conversation with each other or even successfully make eye contact. It's like Susan has suddenly decided that it is her mission to get them in the same place and to make it all okay.
Which is really difficult because you figure Meredith still, it's a really long trip for Meredith to actually trust Thatcher.
Meredith still wants to kill him with a rock, I think.
I think absolutely that's a really good description because fundamentally he left this kid and never checked on her, never checked her out.
Left her basically with the Wicked Witch of the West.
Not exactly the poster child for momdom, probably.
No.
Great surgeon, though, and obviously an incredibly impressive woman, but he left her and didn't have the guts to stick up for his kid. And moved away and started another family. And so I think she's...
Or even visit, or even
write a letter.
Send a little birthday present. Nothing.
And he cops to that. I mean, he basically gave her his snoring. That's the big legacy. So I think that Susan is such a kind-hearted and, you know, she's that kind of mom you kind of want as a mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she seems kind of like she rolls with the punches and she probably talks too much and she cooks stuff and...
She's the cookies and milk mom.
Cooking, yeah.
I had to go down the block to Holly Robinson's house because she had the cookies and milk mom. And my mother was great, but there was never at 3 o'clock going to be cookies available.
I know. I had to come home and get, I think I had yodels. I don't think we ever had homemade cookies. I think we had like yodels and ringdings or something. And then for those of you.
We did too.
See, I'm telling you, like devil's food cake and bad creamy filling. And then I used to peel all the chocolate off the outside.
Right, which tasted really good. And I'm sure that Holly Robinson actually wanted the yodels because they tasted better than the cookies.
Like the homemade cookies.
But there was like something mythic. Like even at 8, I knew that there was something mythic about the cookies and the milk.
But that's also the mom later on that when you're a teenager and you have friends and their parents don't understand them, you can bring them to your house, and it's the slightly more grown-up equivalent of cookies and milk. You know, it's like your mom's kind of cool about it and leaves you. Susan sort of strikes me as that kind of mom, that she kind of rolls with the punches.
Right.
And, like, Meredith's never had that in her life, which is, there's like adult who's sitting there who's actually being kind of cool to her and just accepting her for what she is and not pushing her, but kind of hoping that these two people can get together.
And poor Thatcher, no matter how much he wants in his heart to make a connection with poor little Meredith, he just can't say anything.
He can't do it.
Without putting his foot in his mouth. Like, and way in.
And you think, on Thatcher's point, how scared he must have been of Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how frightened Ellis made of him that he didn't have the confidence to actually seek out his daughter, and how bad he must have felt about that.
Yeah.
So, I think, and then my favorite thing about that is that scene in the, when Thatcher goes off to fix the fuse and Derek comes in. And there's that great scene where the two of them are talking.
They totally get each other. Thatcher gets Derek in a way that nobody does.
No, because he understands the life of a surgeon, but he also understands what it's like to actually date a gray.
Yeah.
Like, love a gray, which, by the way,
Not an easy job.
Not the easiest thing in the world.
No.
Wouldn't think so. So that's, I'm going to be interested to see if Susan can actually do anything to change this. I mean, because
Betsy has no idea what's coming.
None. Interestingly enough, I'm a clean slate.
Completely out of the loop.
Every week. Just because primarily I sit in here in a hot office with my phone being
sweating.
By the way. I just lost 5 pounds, which is good. I'm not complaining about the weight loss thing.
That's all good.
I also thought it was interesting to see a little bit of Derek's past come back with his friend who needed surgery.
Oh, how cool was she?
And by the way, one of my favorite actresses. I mean, just incredible.
Amazing. She was incredible to watch her work. She was just inspiring.
And so elegant. And I really believe that she knew him for a long period of time and that they have a huge history together, you know.
And he just went through this thing. He watched Meredith almost die in his arms. He's got, like, he's in a sort of a PTSD state. Like, he's still rattled and shaken by the whole thing in a way that Meredith seems like she isn't. And here's this person. Here's this other woman who comes in who he loves like a sister, and they were old friends, and they know each other, and he's been her doctor for so long. And the notion that she's going to let go of life in the way that Meredith almost did is just way, way, way too much for him to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so he turns into this kind of, like, it's like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. Like, mm-hmm. He turns into bad surgeon Derek. Like, he's forcing this surgery on
her. Absolutely, yeah.
In a way that's, it's over the line a little bit, but he can't handle the notion that that another woman who he cares deeply about might go away. He can't handle it. It's just too much.
So we've got another episode coming up after this one, but we're not going to tell you very much about it because we can't right now.
Because we like to make you wait.
But there's some really, really good stuff in it, and I think we'll find out exactly what happened in the mystery bed of special bourbon.
Yeah, that's a morning after that I think is worth.
It's going to be really, really worth tuning in for. I think it's going to be worth everyone's time and effort. And there's a lot of amazing stuff coming up in the next episode. And as always, we never really tell you anything. We just tell you everything's going to be really amazing. So we really appreciate your taking time and energy to listen to us talk about this episode. And
while we sweat,
and hopefully you're in a better air conditioned or happier place where you're eating homemade cookies and drinking some milk or whatever or bourbon, or whatever your particular
chocolate chip cookies
taste is.
And bourbon actually sounds kind of good.
That's actually not bad. We could get a fan in here. That would
be perfect.
So, I'm Betsy Beers.
I'm Deborah Kahn.
Thank you very much for listening, and this is Grey's Anatomy.
Bye.
Bye.
That about wraps up this podcast. Don't forget, you can get more Grey's Anatomy at abc.com, including the writer's blog, music guide, and streaming episodes. Join us next time for more insights from the cast and creative team of Grey's Anatomy. My Favorite Mistake airs Thursday, March 22nd from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athletes' worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world, delivered.